You're listening to A Memory of Nightshade, Book 2, The Scented Court, by A.L. Knorr. Read for you by Manon Kale, a Shooting Star audio production. Prologue. Sasha stared at the distant smudges of green and brown. He stood with booted feet lodged into 2 feet of snow. The other silver fays seated behind him, dozens of them, mostly male, eating and talking in low tones about the conditions of the road and the way they'd been rounded up and told on very short notice that they'd been selected to make the journey to Solana for the Midwinter Festival. They'd been told it was time for the Silver Fae to branch out, time to rebuild the network they'd had many decades ago, and Prince Ruskin, Queen Silifki's only son, was the perfect representative to send. But he needed a beautiful entourage to accompany him. No prince could make an impact without a large group of supporters. Those chosen had to look more Silver Fae than simply Fae, which meant only those with the palest eyes and the whitest hair were asked to go. It also meant only those who were tall, healthy, nicely muscled, and with a beautiful bone structure. They were to enchant the Scented Court with their exotic presence. They were to enthrall the citizens of Solana and Ivrundians visiting from other kingdoms. They were to set the stage for alliances, trade agreements, and open roads between Silverfall and the other nations of Ivrundi. They were to bring back wagon loads, transitioning into sleighs at the border, full of Solanan perfumes and cosmetics, beautifully scented products to enhance the ice-white hair and porcelain skin of the Silver Fae elite. They had been warned they would have to endure some difficulties. The weather, for example, would be uncomfortably warm. They would sweat. They might have to change or even bathe multiple times per day. There would be irritating insects, which could also be noisy at night. These flying critters were special to the court, and even allowed indoors. The latter was whispered in horror. The food would be too rich, too varied, poorly combined, and poorly prepared. The courtiers would be shallow and would not understand Silver Fae culture or etiquette. They would have their own strange ways of behaving, which might involve unusual rituals, ridiculous ceremonies, and trumpery. By the time Prince Ruskin's entourage had been fully informed and were ready to leave, Sasha was very confused, but too embarrassed to ask someone to clarify whether this trip was a privilege or a punishment, an honor or a castigation. Due to actions his father, Elvio, Queen Silifki's ex-sorcerer, had taken when Sasha was too young to remember, Sasha was a member of an undesirable family. These same actions had forever bent Elvio like a tree growing on an intolerably windy slope, prematurely aged and deformed. Yet Sasha had still been chosen for this mission, not because he had the right build and features, but because the purpose of the trip was only partly to do with alliances. What the other Silver Fae did not know was that Prince Ruskin was looking for someone. Someone who had been poorly described in a poem. A poem that Sasha was only allowed to read part of. And he was certainly not allowed to understand the significance of this person. Sasha, promised by his father to Queen Silifki as payment for his mistakes, had been raised alongside Prince Ruskin at the court of Silverfall. They'd had the same fencing master, the same tutors, the same elocution training and language classes. They were even friendly once, when they were young boys. But those memories were so faded, and Sasha and Ruskin were so clearly no longer friends, that it left Sasha wondering whether those memories were merely tricks of his mind. It had all changed when Sasha hit a major growth spurt at the age of 14. In the course of a year, he'd gained 6 inches over Ruskin. Where the boys had once been well matched, now Sasha was undeniably advantaged over the shorter, stockier prince. Though Ruskin was older by a mere 7 months, Sasha's voice had changed first. He was able to grow facial hair first. He'd put muscle on faster and was beautifully proportioned, with the long limbs the Silver Fae admired. The females had taken obvious notice of him at court. even the daughters of the richest nobles and most powerful aristocracy. By the age of 15, Ruskin, a previously decent lad with nice manners and gracious speech, had become hostile toward Sasha. He still took every opportunity to lord his royal heritage, never letting Sasha forget that Elvio had betrayed Queen Silifki, shaming himself and his kin. Yes, Sasha was permitted to live at court to pay off the debt. But Sasha had traitor's blood running through his veins. He had a deceiver's name and a turncoat's genes. Sasha came to dread his classes because in every session, Ruskin was there, abusing him, calling him ugly names, cheating to beat him, while the instructors and masters looked the other way. Ruskin was the prince. Sasha, an indentured servant with no one to advocate for him. His only friend had been Rialta. Rialta. Surely the other reason he was chosen for this mission. The big, white direwolf bounded through the snow on the mountainside, then stuck her face deep in the powdery stuff, and froze, still as marble, listening for prey. She exploded high into the air, in a powerful and graceful leap, sending her snout straight down upon her prey. She did this at least a dozen times before she was full. Sasha was the only fauna fae in the Silver Court, despised as much as he was admired, a source of disgust as much as fascination. What kind of fae has a bond with an animal? No one could deny the benefits of being magically bonded with a creature like Rialta. She made every hunt successful. She lifted the heart of anyone who set eyes upon her. She delighted the young Silver Fae and shared her body heat with Sasha on bitterly cold nights, which was all of them. Yet somehow, she was also sneered at, a target of derision, and Sasha considered inferior because of his strange magical union with a smelly, overgrown dog. This, too, was Prince Ruskin's doing. His trail of sycophants and flatterers, without a drop of genuine love between them, scorned whoever he scorned. Whom he ridiculed, they ridiculed more viciously. Whom he derided, they disparaged even more bitterly. One benefit of this journey to Solana was the chance for a bit of air, time away from court and its snide residence. In Solana, the Silver Fae would be on their best behavior, and one of their imperatives was to give an impression of unity and decency among themselves. Sasha looked forward to not being the brunt of open jibes, and for Rialta to be valued the way familiars should be. After all, Solana had a whole retinue of fauna fae. Sasha was desperately curious about them, but he had to wait patiently to reach the famous place, lit with ether lights and smelling of roses, so he could see them for himself. Smiling, Sasha watched Rialta bound through the snow, happy. They were happy, and traveling felt good. They had no other friends, but they didn't need anyone aside from each other. Sasha believed he was lucky, blessed, and this blessing was a secret treasure that he carried within his heart, protected like a rare jewel. No one could take it away from him. Heavy cloud cover blocked out most of the light, but where a few errant shafts pushed through and touched the covered hillside and white-dusted trees, the snow sparkled. It took Sasha's breath away. Beyond this frozen hillside, somewhere far ahead, where the brown and green smudges waited, was their destination. A land without snow. They would see the green of leaves and the rusty brown of iron-rich soils. They would see flowers. No one had prepared Sasha for the feeling of anticipation. Even the bad stuff would be easy to bear, to get to see the earth uncovered and smelling like something other than frozen minerals and falling snow. Sasha's whole body swept with goosebumps. Solana's winter was balmier than Silverfall's warmest summer.
Wolf boy! Eat or starve! We move in 10 minutes!
Grudgingly, Sasha returned to the circle of courtiers. Someone passed him a plate of the worst cuts of cheese, the driest and hardest jerky, and the stalest crusts of bread. A chunk of dirty snow floated in his tea. He sat without a word of complaint and swallowed it all down.